need some reinforcement here. And thanks, David.
You're welcome, Paul.
Yeah.
See you next time.
And that is next time. And after that, there's this little thing called graduation that might interfere with your schedule.
That it might. It definitely will.
Okay. I was giving a caveat. Okay. Opinions are those of the speakers, of course. That's the idea of the station, to get all those opinions out. And if you feel like you need a right of reply, and thanks again for Dan, who wrote a letter to us on the Balkan humanitarian. You're welcome to also write newsfromneptune@gmail.com as well. It's time for the Labor Guys.
Hello, folks. Welcome to the April 30th, 2011 edition of the Illinois World Labor Hour, brought to you over the air by WFT 90.1 FM radio in Champaign, Illinois, and webcast worldwide at weft.org. The views and opinions expressed during this hour program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of WFT's management, board of directors, or Prairie Air Incorporated. Now, here's Tom to acknowledge some of our underwriters.
This hour of programming is being brought to you by you, the listeners of WEFT, and by the Brotherhood of the Maintenance Way. The Brotherhood of the Maintenance Way employees are proud to continue their support for the Illinois World Labor Hour. A democratic union, the BMWE celebrates the voice for labor on WEFT. It is our hope that all workers may share the same benefits that they enjoy, such as living wages, job security, away-from-home expense pay, early retirement, Canadian-style health insurance, and guaranteed year-round work. And the Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by you, the listeners of WEFT, and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois.
Okay, thank you, Tom. I'm your host, David Johnson, here today with co-host Tom Thomas, who will have some workers' interest news for us. And later in the show, the Labor Hour Cultural Corner. Tom's poem for this week from his book, Cries for Justice, is entitled Sing a Song for May Day. Also here with us today is Bob Plesney and Bill Gorell. And we're going to be having some guests coming in about half past the hour. And we're going to be, this today is our special May Day program, because tomorrow is May 1st, which is International Labor Day, actually. The only countries in the world that May Day isn't officially celebrated as Labor Day or Workers' Day is in the United States and Canada, with some interesting history why. But anyway, we can get on with some headlines, starting with Tom Thomas.
Working-class American households suffering from gasoline prices of over $4 a gallon are also facing larger bills for practically everything else they need to live. Major producers of everyday consumer products and groceries are saying they have to raise their prices in order to offset their soaring costs for fuel and the materials and ingredients that go into their various products. Retailers, unfortunately, are having to pass those extra costs to them along to the customer. The ballooning prices at the cash registers are already adding unnecessary pressure on a still sluggish U.S. economic recovery. The U.S. Commerce Department has reported that economic growth slowed through the first 3 months of this year, and at the same time, unemployment benefit requests are continuing to climb. A boycott of the oil companies would not be practical at this time, but what about investigation of and removal from their positions of power of the CEOs who got us into this mess to begin with?
Thanks, Tom. Here's a story. Longtime garment union chief Bruce Rayner is resigning from his union leadership positions following allegations of misconduct regarding his union expense reports. Rayner's resignations as president of Workers United and as executive vice president of Service Employees International Union, SEIU, are effective May 7th. He will retain leadership positions at union-affiliated financial institutions, including chairmanship of the Amalgamated Life Insurance Company and a board position at the Amalgamated Bank. A controversial figure in the labor movement, Rayner was instrumental in the tempestuous creation and dissolution of Unite Here, the merged garment and hotel restaurant workers union that split acrimoniously in 2009. Rayner's departure, announced April 27th, comes amid a changing of the guard at SEIU in the wake of the June 2010 resignation of the union's president, Andy Stern, a close Rayner ally. Rayner supported Anna Berger as Stern's successor, but Mary Kay Henry beat out Berger. An outside union source said Bruce Rayner is a vestige of Andy Stern and Anna Berger, and Mary Kay is now the head. So this is a game of politics. People were not very happy with a strong personality like Bruce. The allegations facing Rayner stem from meals he charged to the union. Bruce Rayner says, I strongly believe that the challenged expenditures were appropriate union-related expenses. He said, however, that he had repaid the contested $2,316.03.
Well, I never cared for Bruce Rayner, but nevertheless. Bill, do you have any stories, sir?
Excuse me there. Thank you for the microphone. Yeah, one thing that's come up is Fender Guitar Company has created a new Wayne Kramer signature guitar. That's pretty sharp. It's like the one that he used to play back in the day, where he'd be playing it behind his head and while he's laying on his back and doing all sorts of things like that. And for those of you who don't remember, we used to play a lot of Wayne Kramer here on this show, especially back in the 90s. Wayne Kramer was a lead guitarist for the MC5. And for those of you who don't remember them, they were a revolutionary band out of Detroit, Michigan, who, by the way, was the only band to play in Grant Park for the protesters at the 1968 Chicago Democratic Convention. Anyway, Wayne's Fender guitar, new signature guitar, is a replica of one that he used to play, as I said. It's got a red, white, and blue stars and stripes paint motif, which has been what they call in the guitar industry relict, which makes it look like it's been played and some of the paint's kind of worn off of it. It's got a 21-fret neck with a rosewood fretboard. And instead of the standard three single-coil Stratocaster pickup system, it has a single-coil bridge pickup, a humbucker in the middle, and a single coil in the neck position. So it's going to be a different sounding guitar than most Stratocasters. Anyway, we'll be bringing you some Wayne Kramer or some MC5 here. I'm looking around on my computer right now. And see, I believe this guitar is going to cost around $1,300.
Okay.
Which, I mean, for at these times, for a guitar is not too bad, mm-hmm. especially for something that's a commemorative signature guitar. And by the way, on a personal note, I did happen to meet Wayne around, it was over 10 years ago. He was going to play at the High Dive here in town, and I went and hung around after work. I'd poured concrete 10 hours for the notorious Stark Excavating.
Yes,
and happened to see their van pull in and start loading out in the alley and went back and talked to him. He invited me to come to the show, and I went home and fell asleep in my recliner.
Oh.
So, you know, I was getting a little too old, I guess. But Wayne's still rocking, man, and he's... Geez, he's got to be in at least his early 60s, but there's some really good stuff on YouTube of him recently playing with a sort of a reformed MC5. And you might also have heard, too, there's been a lot of buzz around about Patti Smith lately. I guess she's got like a new book or something out, and she's been in the media a lot. And she was married to Fred Sonic Smith, formerly of the MC5. So the MC5... A lot of people say there would be no punk or metal if yes. it were not for the MC5. They were one of the most influential but probably little-known bands in rock history. And just look them up on YouTube. There's some fantastic footage of them playing various places, especially a concert at Wayne State University in Detroit, Michigan. And it's incredible.
Yeah, we did a whole show on Wayne Kramer and the MC5 and that whole Detroit kind of revolutionary music scene and stuff that, you know, came out.
I mean, Detroit is really, really the rock capital of the United States. Blue collar, like Bob Seger. Actually, Iggy Pop was from Ann Arbor, but I mean, pretty close by. Mm-hmm. Alice Cooper, who became a Republican, but,
yeah.
You know, but he did have Billion Dollar Babies was a really good analysis of the record industry.
Yeah,
for
indeed.
That matter.
Indeed.
And, God, let me see, several other bands, that's not even counting the Motown.
Yeah, I was just going to say Motown, you know. Of course, you know.
Incredible. Well, Stevie Wonder.
Okay, yeah.
You know, that's an incredible city, man. I have to go there someday.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, totally depopulated now. Yeah. You know?
I have several Facebook friends, radical Facebook friends from Detroit, and I hope to meet up with them in Chicago, possibly at the League of Revolutionaries for a New America conference. It's going to be on the weekend of May 22nd, or the Socialist 2011 conference, which will be... ironically enough, on the 4th of July weekend.
Okay. Oh, that's not ironic, really. But anyway, all right, Britain's Penny Pinching Royals. Yes, you actually are going to hear a news segment on the Labor Hour about the cursed royal wedding. Britain's Penny Pinching Royals were exposed today for allowing cleaners in the opulent surroundings of Buckingham Palace to be paid $2 an hour less than the legislated London living wage. Members of the union PCS, which represents 25 low-paid cleaning staff at royal residences, descended on the palace to draw up support from tourists and passerbys for their fair pay campaign. BPCS organizer Lizzie Woods brandished a cleaning brush and a loud hailer at the palace gates to declare 30 million pounds of taxpayer money is paid to the royal family annually for the upkeep of the royal household. It's clear the London living wage is affordable. And anyway, I guess one cleaner who didn't want to be identified for fear of reprisal said that working conditions were deteriorating at Buckingham Palace. Tourist Attracta Kelly said, quote, "With all the hype and money over the royal wedding, it's disgraceful they are not paid the London living wage." Tom?
All states promise their employees monthly pension checks upon retirement and pay for them by joining with their active employees to contribute money that is then invested. However, states risk getting into financial troubles when they fail to put aside enough money as they go while promising employees bigger pension checks. Bad decisions and a suffering economy have combined to leave 31 states below the safety line set for investing money to meet future pension costs. The double whammy is also increasing the chance that officials will eventually have to fix the problem by cutting benefits or raising taxes. According to the Pew Center on the States, 22 states previously failed to meet the payout threshold, and 9 more came up short in 2009. Illinois had the largest shortfall of the states, with only 51% of payout cash immediately available, while New York State was in the best shape with 101%. According to the Pew study, there's little danger of an immediate crisis, such as any state being unable to send out its pension checks. Unfortunately, though, Illinois' retirement systems have had to sell assets to come up with the needed money because the state government is not meeting its obligations.
I disagree with how they phrase that as poor decisions on the part of these investment firms in the states, because there's a new documentary out called Inside Job, which documents just that this was not poor decisions. This was a major ripoff by Wall Street of most of us Americans, including our pension funds.
By the way, Dave, I don't remember if it still is. I haven't had a chance to check. Look today, but it was playing at the Art Theater.
Yes,
I remember last. It's week also it was at 5 o'clock.
Yes, show. It's also out in DVD, and I know it's at the public library and probably a few video stores here in town as well. That's Inside Job. Check it out.
Okay, the Egyptian Revolution has opened the doors for workers' unions to mobilize in Egypt, and it is bearing fruit. The Egypt Federation for Independent Unions was established as a result of the revolution and gave their first press conference yesterday at their headquarters to raise the curtain on the May 1st Labor Day and to explain several issues. Before the revolution, all laws limited the syndicate's activities, but the constitutional decree gives us back our rights. And here we are establishing our independent union, Kamal Abbas, one of the founders of Egypt Federation for Independent Unions, said. Thousands of laborers and Egyptians are expected to celebrate Labor Day this Sunday in a way that has never been seen prior to the January 25th revolution. Workers will gather with their families in Tahrir Square on Labor Day with Egyptian flags to celebrate their day after the revolution, said Abbas. According to Abbas, the union has informed the military council, the Ministry of Interior, and the Egyptian cabinet about the celebration, which will kick off with a 20-minute play, then several speeches by the heads of the unions, followed by a concert of famous Egyptian singer Ali El Hagar. Bill?
Well, by the way, folks, I am looking at the schedule here for the Art Theater in Champaign, and of course, this is the Ebertfest weekend, and they brought back a film that they played at the Virginia back in 2009, which I saw, which was really interesting, and also includes a segment on the Winnipeg General Strike, and it's a documentary called My Winnipeg.
Okay, I've never heard of it.
Yeah, and that will be playing at 5:30 p.m.
Okay, good.
Which is very, very interesting movie, and it does, oh, wow, we did have one really wild thing happen in Winnipeg, the general strike.
Okay. Chiquita Banana, the giant multinational company, has been involved with Colombian paramilitaries and guerrilla groups that its owners have acknowledged. While most payments were made in the early 90s to the guerrilla groups, an August 1993 memo indicates the company's subsidiary in Turbo had begun channeling security payments, quote-unquote, to the Colombian army through a banana association known as Agura at a price of 3 cents per tons of banana shipped. Chiquita's apparent quid pro quo with the guerrillas and paramilitaries responsible for countless killings bellies the company's plea deal with the Justice Department, said Michael Evans, NSA's chief researcher on Columbia. What we don't know is why U.S. prosecutors overlooked what appears to be clear evidence that Chiquita benefited from these transactions. And nearly 150 unionists have been murdered in the past 3 years alone, according to Colombia's main human rights group. The Justice Department has investigated the case for 4 years and said it found no involvement of Chiquita with the goals of the right-wing paramilitary terrorist groups, which is pretty hard to believe. Okay, Tom?
According to the U.S. Department of Commerce, more people bought new homes in March, giving the battered industry a little bit of a boost after the worst winter for sales in a half century. New home sales rose 11% from February's totals to a seasonally adjusted rate of 300,000 homes, which follows three straight monthly declines. However, that still remains far below the 700,000 new homes a year that many economists view as economically healthy. Sales of new homes fell last year for the fifth consecutive year, and the market is showing no signs of rebounding soon. Builders are struggling to compete with the record number of foreclosures, which have forced down the prices of previously occupied homes and made them more of a bargain. That disparity has been a drag on the economy, with new homes representing only a fraction of anticipated sales. According to the National Association of Home Builders, each new home creates an average of three jobs for a year and $90,000 in taxes. But first, they have to sell the new homes. Bob?
Massachusetts House lawmakers voted overwhelmingly Tuesday night to strip police officers, teachers, and other municipal employees of most of their rights to bargain over health care, saying the change would save millions of dollars for financially strapped cities and towns. The vote went 111-42, and it follows tougher measures to broadly eliminate collective bargaining rights for public employees in Ohio, Wisconsin, and other states. But unlike those efforts, the push in Massachusetts was led by Democrats, who have traditionally stood with labor to oppose any reduction in workers' rights. Unions fought hard to stop the bill, launching a radio ad that assailed the plan and warning legislators if they voted for the measures, they could lose their union backing in the next election. After the vote, labor leaders accused House Speaker Robert A. DeLeo and other Democrats of turning their backs on public employees. "It's pretty stunning," said Robert J. Haynes, president of the Massachusetts AFL-CIO. "These are the same Democrats that all these labor unions elected, the same Democrats who we contributed to their campaigns, the same Democrats who tell us over and over again that they're with us and that they believe in collective bargaining, that they believe in unions. It's a done deal for our relationship with the people inside that chamber. We're going to fight this thing to the bitter end," he added. "Massachusetts is not the place that takes collective bargaining away from public employees."
Man, there you go. Another betrayal by the Democrats. Okay, we're going to play a little music, and then we'll be right back with Tom Thomas's poem of the week and with some of our special guests that just arrived here in the studio. So stay tuned. I'm not afraid to And now we're at that program for the Labor Hour Cultural Corner with Tom's brand new poem of the week, Sing a Song, or actually it's an old poem from his book, Sing a Song for May Day.
May Day is a world holiday for all workers worldwide, and countless workers march that day in honor of the ones who died. Memories rise on May Day of martyrs who once were working folk, who gave their all in brotherly love and suffered for the truths they spoke. May the 1st, 1886, thousands stood in Chicago town, but then bluebellies hit the bricks until May 4th shot strikers down. Workers wanted an 8-hour day, so they marched to Haymarket Square to say what they needed to say, but certainly not to die there. Yes, for daring to speak out loud, the police just shot workers down, victims of whom we must be proud, they who fell in Chicago town. Haymarket's last victims were hanged in November of that same year by a state so potently fanged, true justice was not even near. And theirs was not the only blood, those victims of Haymarket Square. So many other workers have stood against systems that were unfair. And what we've learned from history is that there's but one way to stand, and that's together in unity, each of us with our flag in hand. May Day we'll sing to quell the pains and to praise all labor's martyrs. We've nothing to lose but our chains. Just remember that for starters. Sing a Song for May Day was written at the Poets Loft in Champaign, Illinois on May 23rd, 2007 and was brought to you live today, April 30th, 2011 here on the Illinois World Labor Hour on WEFT 90.1 FM in Champaign, community radio for East Central Illinois.
Thank you, Tom. We got some public service announcements here. Revolution in the Air, a fundraising dinner for the Socialism 2011 conference. It'll be today, Saturday, April 30th from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. at the Jerusalem Cafe at 601 South Wright Street in Champaign, barely in Champaign. Revolution is in the air. The epic revolution spreading throughout North Africa and the Middle East have shown that masses of ordinary people can take control of their own lives. And the heroic struggles of Wisconsin workers to defend their unions have inspired people across the country to fight for their own rights. The urgency of an alternative to a system of austerity, war, and profit tyranny has never been more apparent to millions of people. Dozens of people from Champaign-Urbana, possibly hundreds, and at the University of Illinois as well, will be heading to the Socialism 2011 conference in Chicago to discuss this alternative and network with more than thousands of activists around the country. The Socialism 2011 conference will occur on the weekend of July 1st to the July 4th. You need to make sure everyone who wants to be able to go can afford it. So to help contribute to this cause or to find out more about attending the conference or getting involved in the socialist movement, join us Saturday for an evening of food, entertainment, and political discussion. That's at Jerusalem Cafe, 601 South Wright, 7:30 to 9:30 tonight, and it's a $10 suggested donation. And we also want to remind viewers of Labor's World View on public television station Comcast Channel 6 with host Jim Iman and yours truly. Tune in for Labor's World View TV to get a labor perspective, a program by, about, and for working people. Also this weekend, on actual May Day, Sunday, May 1st, at 1 p.m., join the singing flash mob at Marketplace Food Court, 2000 North Neal Street, Champaign, at the Marketplace Mall. May 1st is May Day here, but it's also the International Labor Day, so come and help the flash mob sing some unannounced and unprepared event at Marketplace Mall. That should be quite interesting, because I don't think they have a mall permit for that.
Yeah, Dave, I wanted to mention that WEFT is still in the middle of our pledge drive.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And you can call us at 217-359-9338 with a pledge, or you can go online to weft.org and click on the Donate Now button, or you can mail it to WEFT, P.O. Box 1223, Champaign, Illinois, 61824-1223. So, as Dave likes to say, you won't hear the views here on corporate radio or corporate media anywhere else. So.
Oh, yeah, and also you won't hear anything like it on Sirius either. I know a lot of people have been defecting. A lot of people listen to the various music on WEFT have been defecting to the satellite services. But you won't hear anything like this on them. So keep that happening. And I don't know, we may end up someday, if they're all the music listeners go to the satellite services, might just go ahead and be radical all the time. Who knows? But I also, speaking of other radio services, I will be guest co-hosting on Not Another Sports Show this afternoon at 2 p.m. on WRFU, and that's 104.5 FM. In very far inside Champaign. It's a low-power station, but you can stream it at WRFU.net, and that's at 2 p.m. And we'll be discussing the NFL's attempted lockout.
Okay, very good. And that's, of course, with fellow worker Neil Parthen. Okay, we're going to play a little bit of music here, and we'll be right back with our special guests here in the studio.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, don't give up the fight.
Man, oh, tell me, heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that glitter is gold. After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on,
get up.
Okay, we're back. That was Bob Marley. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. And I think that's a very appropriate song for May Day. But I'd like to welcome our two special guests here in the studio, Gene Vanderport and Jermaine Light. Thank you for coming in today on this very special day. I couldn't think of two more appropriate guests to come in on our May Day show.
Now we're honored to be here.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, anyway, there's been a lot going on, and I have to add that Jermaine Light, of course, is our new, what's the term we gave for? Our Labor Hour correspondent, live correspondent, yes, Labor Hour live correspondent. She gave some really good, excellent call-in reports from live from Madison, Wisconsin during the demonstrations, as well as Springfield and almost Chicago, and I think Indianapolis. So, yes, and we're hoping to utilize Jermaine again here in the future, because that Madison one especially was just, I mean, really excellent. Really excellent.
Yeah, that's what I want to do when I retire.
Full time. Okay. Full-time, well, yeah. Maybe we can get WFT to send you around the world here. You can report from Cairo, wherever else.
Ooh, that's fun.
I've been wondering where she's been.
But anyway, yes, you know, Gene and Jermaine, you both are, of course, union activists, whether you want to deny it or not, and for many, many years. And I guess we could just start out by asking you, what is it? What's special about May Day for you guys? I mean,
Well, I was raised by a whole bunch of coal miners who just happened to be also socialists, so I didn't know that May Day was anything other than the Working People's Day. It wasn't celebrated in a big, fancy way. Just stories were told and references were made. And so, you know, I learned over time what it's meant to all of us. And it's the People's Day. It's not just the International Working People's Day. It's the People's Day. And so it's a day of liberation and a day of emancipation for all people who work for a living and all the people who would like to be working for a living. That's what it means to me.
Hey, Gene, I'm just going to jump in. It's nice to see you again, by the way. Thanks for coming down here. We've got somebody who's also back. Dee from Urbana says that she cannot believe that during all the stuff going down in Wisconsin that she forgot to listen to the labor program during said some of the TV, some of the shows didn't do too badly, but she's glad that she's back. She's really glad to be hearing the discussion, and she's calling in support. So thanks, Dee from Urbana, who's been a longtime supporter of WEFT. And she catches Democracy Now! Actually on the Urbana Public TV, not listening from 4 to 5 on the radio, but watching early in the morning on UPTV, I think Channel 6. So thanks, Dee.
Yes, thank you, Dean. That's very, very important, is that you've got to get an alternative news information source out there, and Democracy Now! Is an excellent one, and you know, definitely here at WFT, because you're not going to have a labor program on corporate-funded radio or television. That's for certain. And it's hard to even get balanced, or I should say accurate news coverage from the corporate media. So thank you, Dee, again. But anyway, Gene, so you grew, tell us a little about where you grew up and kind of some of your members of your family.
I'm from Westville, Illinois.
Just south of Danville, a few miles.
South of Danville, mm-hmm. And Westville was noted for the fact it was the center of the coal mines, mm-hmm. and almost everybody in town was mining coal at some part of the day. You could be a school teacher, but you're mining coal at night. You could be a school student, and you're mining coal at night. And so my father, he started mining when he was 14. He was one of the older of the kids who had to go to the coal mines. All his brothers were in the mines. Both of my grandfathers died because of mine accidents or mine-related illnesses, like a black lung. And, everybody knew they were union. There was no question about it. And then those unions in that part of the country went back to the 1880s. I mean, some of the first coal mining leaders in the state of Illinois actually came from the Danville-Westville area. And those folks who heard about the Verdun massacre, mm-hmm. a lot of folks don't know, a black coal mining leader called the Duke led miners all the way across the state of Illinois on a march to Verdun. From Danville to Verdun.
That's
a long ways today,
yeah.
on the interstate. But they marched all the way over there in solidarity with those folks over they were subject to the massacre. And so that's the kind of solidarity we grew up with. And I think the best story I was ever raised with, my father taught me about his first experience in a strike. And it was in the early 30s. He'd just, become a mine worker at that time, and 21. 1934, and the strike they had was at Peabody, if I'm not mistaken. Peabody was the worst place you could work. I mean, there was somebody dying there almost weekly. It was just a terrible, terrible place to work. So the other coal miners said, you know what? If they go out, we go out too. And the way they did that, they go out for a half a day, and for a half a day, those miners from Peabody would come over and work in the other mines just so they could all share. And this is the depth of the Depression. Now think about this. Nobody had anything. But they split the nothing they had in two and shared it with all the other people in Westville. So it's that kind of solidarity that just, how do you forget that?
Yeah. So. Well, we don't have it now, man. As people in the building trades, there's people that are out making 50, 60, 70. It's 2009 when everything went to hell. There's still people out making 50, 60, $70,000 a year. Yeah. But do you think anybody would even consider splitting work?
Yeah.
Well,
I think the one place where I'm seeing more of that now, and my father used to tell me this story. When the mines dry up, you got to use your other mine. Okay, it's going to be no longer the United Mine Workers, MINE. It's going to be something else, MIND. Mm-hmm. And so my whole family said, you're going over to that college, and kind of hinted at the fact that you should do something labor. But what I see happening today, whether it's Wisconsin, Ohio, Illinois, public sector workers, and particularly public education workers, are as stone union as you get. And people are willing to shut down anything for the sake of their children, sake of their welfare, for the sake of all the things that come from public services. It may be our last redoubt, but it's going to be one powerful redoubt.
Yes. And Jermaine, can you tell us a little about yourself? Of course, you're a union school teacher in Mahomet, and just tell us a little about your background and stuff and how you came to the union movement.
Yes, that's correct. I am a member of Illinois Education Association, and Gene is a staff member of that union. And I had a very different upbringing than Gene. I was raised on a farm near Bloomington by a McLean County Republican family.
Oh, okay.
And did not have a union background. And the first time I witnessed solidarity was, the first time I was in a union was actually not the teacher's union. It was the Amalgamated Transit Union, and I was a public transit bus driver in Bloomington Normal. And what I witnessed and in solidarity at that time, it was the late 70s, and the Normal firefighters were on strike. I guess you call it the term slipped my mind, wildcat strike, right, mm-hmm. because it was illegal. But actually, it was a strike in name more than it was because they still were going to have the fire stations manned. But the Normal City of Normal decided to put them in jail anyway, and they instead of having half of them at home and half of them or half of them on the picket line and half of them in the fire stations, so they were still manning the fires and fighting the fires. They put the half that were on the picket line in jail, and then they switched them out every, I can't remember, 2 days or something like that. And every time they switched them out, all the local unions would send people, and we'd have a rally and sing songs and cheer for them as they got out of the police shuttles and went into the fire station, and the ones in there came out and went to jail. So it was an amazing thing of solidarity that I saw, and that's really what flipped me over, I think, into understanding what a union is. And then, of course, much later, I became a member of the teachers' union after I got my degree and became a teacher.
Yes, and, you know, that's interesting about, you know, the public sector unions are the ones that seem to be in the crosshairs for the ruling class in this country. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, as we have witnessed with all the events that have just happened recently in Wisconsin and Ohio and Indiana and still going on and everything. But what's interesting is that tomorrow is the 125th anniversary of the Haymarket May Day tragedy and stuff, and and, you know, 125 years later, it seems like we're kind of back somewhat into the same issues. I mean, because, you know, a lot of people, especially those who grew up during the Cold War, just associate May Day with, you know, big military parades in Moscow. But really, May Day is as American as apple pie because it started in Chicago in 1886. And it basically was about the movement for the 8-hour day. It seems like we're revisiting that now, and it's like, what are your thoughts, Gene and Jermaine, about you know, this comparison? I mean, how did we get back to this point?
Well, who would believe that the 8-hour day would be a new demand?
Yes.
Yeah, it's like everything we're faced with today is that if you're not working 24 hours a day for the boss, you're not doing something right, and that is just absolutely insane. I mean, you see the progress has been made on actually reducing the length of the work week in some societies, particularly European, elsewhere, but backward is exactly what I feel that we're heading here. Is that those people who should be on our side on these issues, above all else, just aren't there. And so we got to recreate a movement that makes it possible. And we're just at the beginning of doing that recreation, but what we call rebirth of our movement. It took a few steps back. It's time to take it back.
Okay, yes. And Jermaine, your thoughts?
Yeah, it reminds me of when families get together at funerals and they all say, oh, gee, it's too bad it took something bad to make this happen. But,
yeah,
you know, that's what's happening now all over the country and all over the world, is that people are being abused and used in a horrible way, and they're rising up. And to me, there's a prairie fire going on. I mean, and it's spreading, and it's getting stronger, and We're fighting it in Illinois too. It isn't just Wisconsin and Ohio. It's all over the place.
Well, yeah, like in Massachusetts, you know, Illinois has Democrats running things, so it probably doesn't seem so bad. Even though I hear grumblings from many people in your union worrying about their pension and so on and so forth. And what's happened in Massachusetts this week shows us that Democratic states are not immune. States with the Democratic Party, not that we're necessarily a Democratic state. I think that it takes more than elections to have democracy. But, you know, what reminds me of, you're talking about a rebirth, and, you know, we knew each other back in the 90s.
How'd you guys meet, by the way?
Well, I went over to Decatur, and I was kind of interested in brushing up my photojournalism resume portfolio. And I ran into some people in Kmart where I stopped in to buy a lens, and they all had Labor Vision T-shirts on. And I started talking to them, and they were there for the rally at Decatur that I was there to take pictures of. And I started talking to them, told them I was from Champaign, and they said that, well, you should look up Gene Vanderport. And later on, I did that. And also, I think that same rally, too, is when I met Ann Feeney also. Right.
I was easy to find because I was in handcuffs.
But then, that all inspired Peter Miller to start this show, and things kept rolling. But it seemed like back in the late 1990s, the mid to late 1990s, that things were picking up, that the labor movement was making a comeback. And then then George Bush was elected, and then 9/11 happened.
Stolen. Yeah.
Well, I mean, George Bush was elected by the Supreme Court, and then 9/11 happened, and then the wars happened, and then you had everything. It took all the political air out of the room. Like, for example, Medea Benjamin was a globalism activist, you know, rather than an anti-war activist, and she got all involved in Code Pink, and then everything just, it was all just totally focused on those wars. And now what I'm wondering, now that there is a resurgence, what are they going to do this time? They're already in all these wars.
Yes, indeed. And I think, though, that we see, I mean, I'm waiting for America's Cairo moment, if you will. I mean, we're seeing little sparks of it. Jermaine, I think her analogy of a prairie fire is really good. I don't think we've seen an outright prairie fire yet, but we definitely see, some sparks and some smoke there. I'm just hoping that it's not going to take too much more for people to start rising, because, you know, it's like you always got to ask the question is how bad is it going to have to get before people start really taking action and, making change? Because the only way change has ever occurred, people in power, I don't care what country in the world it is, what point in history, nobody in the ruling class has ever given up anything as far as making lives better for working people without a real struggle and a fight.
You know what I'm seeing that's giving me a whole lot of hope and optimism is if you look at the demographic mm-hmm. of who's in the streets now in Wisconsin, any of these places, the age keeps on dropping. The majority of people in the streets nowadays, think about this, the civil rights movement, the average age of civil rights activists in the South was 13.
Oh, yes.
It was 13.
Like the Birmingham Children's March,
true.
Yes.
Absolutely true. And what I'm seeing now, when you look at that demographic in Wisconsin, you look at who's getting active now, you got 70% of our population with no hope at all for any kind of real jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And these kids can read, they can write, and they text everybody every day. I don't even know how to spell text, okay, let alone see those little machines. But the point being, there's a radicalism there. What stake have they got in this system? The system's left them far behind.
Mm-hmm.
We've become a third world country. They get that. I look at the color of the people that are in this age group. They're brown. They're yellow. They're red. They're every other black. They're every other color. A few of us white folks. But the point is, there's a whole change coming with those folks. They have nothing to lose, everything to gain. They're smart. They're getting better organized. So my hope is that some of us old white-haired guys get out of the way and just, can play some music on the side. I do want to add this in. The first unionized rock and roll band
mm-hmm.
In Vermilion County is going to be playing tomorrow at my May Day event at the Laborers Hall. Now, how the heck I found all these old guys, but we did. We went over to Danville the other day, and every old union musician from the rockin' 60s was there. Now, that was fun.
Wow, that sounds great. That's an interesting thing, because I know you've told me some stories, too, about when you went to the University of Illinois. That was back, when did you start there as a freshman, 67, 68?
Yeah, 67. I waited until it got really red hot.
Yeah, I was going to say, your timing's always been good, Gene. But nevertheless, you said, though, that, of course, that was, the anti-war movement. Mm-hmm. That was going, starting to really pick up steam at that point in 67. Yeah. I was primarily youth oriented, but you had your all your fellow young comrade friends and shirt and everything. But what always inspired me was you told me that over in at home over in Westville in Vermilion County, that you had a whole group of older people that came out of the 30s that would actually come to meetings with the younger guys and girls and advise them on tactics
well,
and stuff.
In fact, we have a – yes, that's true. I mean, it was a weird place to be. It was the right combination. It was partly music, partly that whole mine workers tradition, the auto workers. General Motors was over there.
Mm-hmm.
And just some intellectually – brilliant people, never had much of a chance necessarily going to college, but brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
We were very lucky. And then what we had over here at U of I was this whole group. We used to call them the Red Mafia. It was all the political science people. They were, for some reason or others, it was Morento, Lombardi. It was all these Italians teaching us political science. Which at
hence
that
the
time,
term mafia.
You
okay,
you couldn't have it better because look what they were doing in Italy at that point was they're in the streets, in the factories, factory occupations. So teaching us all those kinds of lessons, and we're also blessed with some labor instructors like Stan Weir and others who were like the it came from the 30s and the 40s, left wing labor organizers who had all those lessons to give us. And I was blessed with a particular uncle who was very, very active. He came out of the IWW, Mine Mill Smelter, was a national organizer for Mine Mill Smelter, and taught me the word socialism. And it was always that word you could not use. But he gave me a definition that, gee, that sounds pretty much what I want. Oh, you mean people have economic democracy with political democracy? That's what that word means? It means not what they keep telling us it means? So I kind of rode with that for a while.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Herman Butcher, right?
Yeah, Herman Butcher.
Yes. And Jermaine, now, of course, you're very active in the IEA Teachers Union right now. You're involved in the regional, I think it's called a council or whatever.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, Region 9.
Region 9, okay. Uh-huh. And so you've been pretty politically involved in stuff. And what do you think public sector employees and unions need to start doing here in Illinois?
Well, right now there's a bill that's being proposed, which may be voted on in the next few days, and people need to call their legislators if they're concerned about this. There's a lot of public sector workers in this area, and so it isn't just public school teachers. You know, it's campus workers, it's AFSCME, SEIU, all kinds of unions are involved in this, and well, they're going to hit our pensions again. They're going to try and hit our pensions again.
Mm-hmm.
And the proposal is up to that we would have to pay up to 29% of our salary per year toward our pensions.
Oh, jeez.
Which is just absolutely unheard of. I mean, a lot of people went into teaching not because of the salary being good, because it's not. You compare it to other professional jobs with similar education requirements.
Mm-hmm.
It is not good pay. But one thing that really made it a good thing was the pension was at least stable, we thought.
Mm-hmm.
It was a carrot, though, that was hanging there, and maybe it's going to be pulled away from us as we approach it. And some are, and may even hit people who are already retired. This proposal is to hit people who are already retired even. I don't know exactly. It has many, multifacets to this proposal.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really, really bad thing. And although we do have Democrats supposedly in control, we also have Democrats like Speaker Madigan, who seems to be more than willing to give away everything.
Yeah.
And so he has a lot of power, and he scares me very much, and we need to get rid of him.
Yeah, I never did like Madigan, even back in the mid-90s when I was told, why is he don't like Madigan? He's pro-labor. Well, I talked to a lot of people from Chicago, and they told me, gave me the real info on Madigan.
Yeah. Well, Brother Mike is wayward right now. He's be brought back inside the family if we can handle that, but it is indeed true. The thing that's happened here, and we all know what the truth of it, after Citizens United, that the most horrible, I could call it the most dreadful Supreme Court decision since Dred Scott.
Basically giving corporations the same rights as people.
So I'm going to keep using that theme, dreadful and Dred Scott, because it makes wage slavery a true slavery, and really pulls the rug out from under us in terms of people's rights. But ever since that, what's happened is the flood of dollars coming from the corporate and the some very, very, very right-wing folks like the Koch brothers. I still can't get the pronunciation right. Anyway, those guys are like pouring money into the system, buying politicians. How else? We gave a speech on the Quad. How else do you get a nutcase like Governor Walker? You got to buy that space. This guy is so shallow. It's incredible. But those folks win elections. You know why? Because none of us can afford the space on TV or on the radio or in the press. They're just buying their way into power. And with it comes quid pro quo that I cannot believe. You've got to not only go after trade unions, you've got to go after even the most rudimentary notions of democracy.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I see at stake here are three things. Democracy itself, even in its truncated form, almost said truncated form here in America, trade unions and free association. And third, the thing that scares me the most is that what little we have of a culture of compassion and caring, they replaced with hate and division. I mean, that's what's coming down the road. Now, I don't know what year you call that, but some folks, people raised me up, called it 1931.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 2011 now. The differences aren't that great, and it scares me.
Yes. Well, let's remember that 3 years after 1931 was 1934, and that year there were three major general strikes in San Francisco, Minneapolis, and Toledo, plus textile strikes all over the South. It was also, unfortunately, the height of the, it was a crime wave year, too. It was the height of the rural bank robberies by Dillinger, Bonnie and Clyde, Pretty Boy Floyd. So,
you're a hero.
Yeah, well, that's
you're talking about some of my relatives now.
And that's the thing is that people in the rural, the reason they were able to elude the law so well is because the rural people considered them heroes.
Like the Woody Guthrie song, Pretty Boy Floyd. Yeah.
Yes. But real quick here, with and that's important, Eugene, you mentioned about the flood of money into the corporate media, and we've got this vicious circle here in this country. You have politicians who, especially at national level offices, can't get elected without getting TV commercials on radio and especially television, and they can't, and that costs a lot of money, and the only way they can get that money is to basically get corporate donations, and the media itself is corporations, and you got this vicious circle. You can't get elected unless you serve the corporate interest, and that's why media like WFT is so important. And please help support your local community radio station by calling in with a pledge. Bob, what is that number?
217-359-9338, or you can go to the website, weft.org.
Okay, and, you know, we have to do this a couple times a year so we can stay on the air to pay the bills and stuff. But anyway, I want to... one thing before I get back to Gene Germain's sort of parting words here is I have to read the names of those labor martyrs who were imprisoned and five of them executed in 1886. And there's going to be a rededication of basically the monument up there on near Halsted and Randolph in Chicago this weekend on Sunday. But anyway, there was August Spies, Fielding, Albert Parsons, Louis Ling, Adolf Fischer, George Engel, and Michael Schwab. And they were all very, very active union members and stuff. And, you know, we've done past shows on the whole details of the Haymarket incident, but basically most of these guys weren't even at the Haymarket meeting when the riot occurred. There was basically rigged juries, judge, and the finally, after five of them were executed, one of them was supposedly killed himself in jail cell, Louis Ling, which was evidence, too, that he was actually murdered by the guards. Nevertheless, Illinois Governor John Altgeld, which Altgeld Hall, over right behind the alma mater statue on Green and Wright, is named after, pardoned the remaining Haymarket people, and that actually is following year, I believe, was when there was an international labor conference in Paris, France, and that's when all the trade unions around all over the world, well, at that point, Europe, mostly Europe and some Latin America, decided that May 1st would then on be International Labor Day. So, Gene Germain, just some parting words here.
Yes, I'd like to say this is a public announcement. I want to say that I need to acknowledge and say happy anniversary to a fine labor activist and my wife, Germain Light. Tomorrow's our anniversary.
That's right. You guys were born. I mean, born. We were. I guess sort of. We're married on May Day at a very special place over south of Bloomington, Funk's Grove. Yes. Well, happy anniversary, happy May Day, and we also don't want to point out, too, that May Day is also a pagan holiday celebration, kind of a spring fest, renewal fest, resurrection fest. Yes.
I think it's cool that it happened to be a Labor Day, too.
Yes, indeed. So, anyway, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been a real honor to have you, and we're going to leave here with a song called People Want Change. It's John Lee Hooker, Jr., and...